Today is Thursday, October the 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Senate Republicans blocked a major voting bill that would allow automatic same-day voter registration and make Election Day a holiday. So, why do both political parties view this issue of voting rights differently, and how will it potentially affect America's system of democracy?
We miss entirely the discussion between people about how you resolve problems. The only question is, can I beat you? And that's the wrong way to approach democracy. Democracy must be solved by the exchange of ideas.
Approval of U.S. leadership around the world rebounded during the first 6 months of President Joe Biden's term.
Even in the first few hours and moments of the Biden administration, Biden was rejoining the Paris Agreement and also stepping back from Trump's decision to withdraw from the World Health Organization. So I think that those olive branches were really promising signs that a lot of allies were looking for.
And Australia's National Science Agency has developed a surveillance system to analyze wastewater samples to detect COVID-19 on long-haul flights. We'll have this story and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. And for our top story, Republicans in the Senate blocked a bill by Democrats to counterweight new voting restrictions in some conservative-controlled states. The AP's Ed Donohue reports.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell calls it a federal
election takeover scheme.
This is the third time this year Democrats have tried to counter changes made at the state level after the 2020 election.
This body will continue to do the job the framers assigned it and stop terrible ideas in their tracks.
But Democrats like Majority Leader Chuck Schumer are making headway in changing procedural filibuster rules.
If there's any issue that merits debate on this floor, it's protecting our democracy from the forces that are trying to unravel it from the inside out.
60 votes were needed to debate the measure. Ed Donohue, Washington.
A bill aimed at blocking restrictive new voting laws enacted in Republican-led states failed to advance in the U.S. Senate on Wednesday as Republican lawmakers blocked a Democratic effort to begin debating the measure. This was the third time this year that Senate Democrats have tried to advance the voting rights bill, which was a reaction to new state balloting restrictions that were fueled by false claims of a stolen 2020 presidential election. So why do both political parties view this issue of voting rights differently, and how will it potentially affect America's system of democracy? Our next guest says that it partly has to do with the legislative branch's uncontrolled delegation of its powers to the executive branch, a situation that the framers of the Constitution sought to avoid. Richard Jacobs is a retired lawyer and constitutional scholar. He's the author of the new book, Democracy of Dollars, where natural and constitutional rights go to the highest bidder. In his book, Mr. Jacobs examines the systemic threats to democracy in the 21st century America. He tells me that that threat has grown exponentially in recent times and suppressed the democracy of people provided for in the Constitution. Mr. Jacobs, again, thank you for joining us. Now, the way we understand democracy is that it is a government for the people, by the people. Now, we are told that in our democracy here, at least in the U.S., is that the citizens are calling the shots. They are driving policy decisions. What does your research show?
That's the theory, but it doesn't show the results. It doesn't show the results for a couple of reasons. One is we've become what I call a democracy of dollars, which is an upside-down democracy. By that, I mean, in democracy, if we were to draw a triangle, the people would be at the base of that democracy. They would provide a strong support. They elect representatives according to the Constitution. The Constitution provides that the legislators legislate laws and the executive officer, the president, implements those laws. That's really how it's supposed to work. But what happens is it's reversed. The triangle is upside down. So the people are on a pin at the bottom. They don't have much voice at all. What has happened is that special interests have dominated. We've become a democracy fed by money. So they are at the top. So what happens is people have very little voice. Congress doesn't really enact much in the way of laws. They delegate to the executive officer, the president. president's influenced by special interests, and so we have an upside-down triangle.
Mm. And do you, would you say that that got worse in the last 4 years, or this is, has been going on for the last, you know, what, the last half century?
It's been going on. It's been growing ever since the Constitution really was adopted 232 years ago. Mm. It became extremely severe when I would say in the presidency of Ronald Reagan, and has been growing since then, particularly in the conservative governments of Reagan and Bush and Trump. Trump was probably the worst.
Now, you said that the currently as it is, the interplay of our three branches of government, the legislative, the executive, and the judiciary, that they are far different institutions from those in 1789. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Okay. First of all, when the Constitution was adopted at first, we had 13 colonies with about 3 million people. We never thought about the expansion of part of the country as it is getting as big as it is today. They also did not contemplate political parties. That was a mistake. They thought that the Senate, for example, which was supposed to be appointed by the legislators of the different state, would be an elite body of independent people that would essentially add the look that Jefferson or Madison or had. In other words, this very elitist intellectual look. And that never happened. What happened is we developed political parties. It actually happened when Jefferson was vying with Adams for the presidency. That's when political parties started. And then political parties then became dominant. And so they've separated, and they now drive the rule. Then what happened is, with political parties driving the rule of the country, then the move became, can my political party dominate so I don't have to pay any attention to you? Rather than having a discussion between people where they exchange ideas, where they share different points of views and come to compromise, it became like a football game. Mm-hmm. I have to win and you have to lose. And that's exactly where it is today. So as a consequence, we miss entirely the discussion between people about how you resolve problems. The only question is, can I beat you? And that's the wrong way to approach democracy. Democracy must be solved by the exchange of ideas, by compromise, by considering the views and interests of all people. And we don't do that.
That was Mr. Richard Jacobs, a retired lawyer and constitutional scholar. He's also the author of the new book, Democracy of Dollars, Where Natural and Constitutional Rights Go to the Highest Bidder. We bring you the second part of our conversation with Mr. Jacobs in tomorrow's International Edition, so stay tuned. The approval of U.S. leadership around the world rebounded during the first 6 months of President Joe Biden's term after a record low in the last year of President Donald Trump's administration. This, according to a new Gallup survey of people in nearly 50 countries. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakuswara has this report.
While he has been plagued by low approval ratings at home in recent weeks, some good news on the global stage for U.S. President Joe Biden. According to a new Gallup report, approval of U.S. leadership has increased from 30% in 2020 to 49% as of August 2021 across 46 countries and territories. The jump is partly driven by the administration's re-engagement with the world. Julie Ray is managing editor for World News at Gallup.
Even in the first few hours and moments of the Biden administration, Biden was rejoining the Paris Agreement and also stepping back from Trump's decision to withdraw from the World Health Organization. So I think that those olive branches were really promising signs that a lot of allies were looking for.
The 49% approval rating matched the record high during President Barack Obama's first year in office in 2009. The record low, 30%, was under President Donald Trump and was likely due to his foreign policy approach.
We are truly and finally putting America first.
The Gallup report suggests Biden's messaging to the world is getting a more favorable response.
America is back. America is back. Diplomacy is back.
But the messy withdrawal from Afghanistan and the September AUKUS agreement to provide Australia with nuclear-powered submarines, canceling a prior deal with France, were deeply criticized even by U.S. allies. Danielle Pletka is a senior fellow in foreign policy at the American Enterprise Institute.
They feel like they were fed a line. Oh, this is an administration that is going to rejuvenate our alliances. We care about NATO. We care about other people. We care about human rights. And then what's happened? We haven't put our money where our mouth is when it comes to Afghanistan, when it comes to the AUKUS deal with Australia. And that's really caused problems.
Despite the improvement, the U.S. is behind Germany, a country that ranked first among respondents, particularly in Europe, Asia, and the Americas. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Voice of America.
The House committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection voted to hold one of Donald Trump's allies in contempt. AP correspondent Mike Garcia reports.
The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection voted unanimously Tuesday night to hold former White House aide Steve Bannon in contempt of Congress for defying a subpoena for documents and testimony. Speaking before the vote, Committee Chair Benny Thompson.
We believe Mr. Bannon has information relevant to our probe, and we'll use the tools at our disposal to get that information.
Representative Liz Cheney, the committee's vice chair, had a message for fellow Republicans.
Almost every one of my colleagues knows in your hearts that what happened on January 6th was profoundly wrong.
But following former President Donald Trump's lead, most congressional Republicans opposed the committee's investigation. Mike Gracia, Washington.
An indictment accuses a U.S. congressman from Nebraska of lying to the FBI. AP correspondent Mike Garcia joins us again with this report.
U.S. Representative Jeff Fortenberry of Nebraska has been indicted by a federal grand jury of lying in a federal investigation into illegal campaign contributions from a Nigerian billionaire. A grand jury in Los Angeles indicted the nine-term Republican on one charge of scheming to falsify and conceal material facts and two counts of making false statements to federal investigators. The charges stem from an FBI investigation of illegal campaign contributions from Gilbert Shaguri, a Nigerian billionaire of Lebanese descent. The contributions, funneled through a group of Californians from 2012 through 2016, went to four U.S. politicians, including Fortenberry, in 2016. I'm Mike Gracia.
This week, Americans and others around the world are reflecting on the life and legacy of Colin Powell, the first black U.S. Secretary of State and top military officer who died on Monday at the age of 84. Paul's family said that he passed away from complications due to COVID-19. He was fully vaccinated, but had been battling multiple myeloma, a cancer of plasma cells that suppresses the immune system. In addition to being a statesman, those close to him say that he was also a great friend. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb spoke to retired Army Colonel Joe Schwa, whose friendship with Paul spanned six decades, about how Schwa would like his friend to be remembered.
Joe Schwa met Colin Powell in early 1959. Both were brand new Army second lieutenants stationed in Germany.
He was a bachelor. I was married. He knew basically where to get a free meal. So the three of us became fairly good friends. I would say very good friends during the 2 years that we served together.
Schwa's next assignment was at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. Now, Schwa is a white man from the northern state of Pennsylvania. He said Powell was one of the first black men he ever knew. Schwa wasn't too familiar with the racial rules in the segregated South, which often mandated separate facilities for blacks and whites until the mid-1960s. He had been on base in North Carolina about a year when...
There was a knock on my door, opened up, and there was Colin Powell with his brand new bride. Colin was distraught because he couldn't find a place that he considered satisfactory for his new bride. It was, I believe it was the Jim Crow at work there. I guess my wife and I looked at each other and without blinking an eye basically said, stay with us.
Powell and his wife Alma, the Schwars, and their young kids shared their three-bedroom apartment for 6 weeks. until Powell finished his training to deploy to Vietnam, and Alma went to live with her family during his deployment.
As long as we stayed on Fort Bragg, we could go anywhere together. We could do anything together. Once or twice, my wife and Alma went down into Fayetteville, and Alma was very sensitive about being an African-American. She educated my wife, basically, on what she could and could not do. And my wife had a little rebellious spirit, and she could not understand why Alma allowed this to happen.
He said the prejudice Alma Powell saw growing up in the South perhaps led to her caution years later when her husband was considering a run for president.
She was concerned about him, not his ability to serve as president, but his physical security serving as president. And I believe she talked him out of it.
After that fateful deployment to Germany in 1959, Schwarr and Powell continued to cross paths. They fought just a few kilometers apart in Vietnam. They also studied at Fort Benning together.
Fast forward to the mid-70s. I was on my way to the Pentagon for an assignment. Colin had already been in the Pentagon for a year when I got there. As things happen in the military, you get there, your house isn't ready for you, your furniture hasn't arrived yet. So we're having dinner with Colin and Alma, and I mentioned the house isn't going to be ready for a while, blah, 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 blah. Colin says, Alma, start doubling up the kids in the rooms. The Schwarrs are moving in with us.
And that, Schwarr says, was just typical Powell. A regular guy, a regular good guy. Someone a young Schwarr never suspected would one day rise to be a four-star general and Secretary of State.
One of the most unforgettable people that I served with. Just a consistent, outstanding record of performance. He was never pretentious. He was a man of his word. What you see is what you get.
And what the nation got was decade upon decade of steadfast service. Powell will be remembered at the Pentagon as one of the greats, following in the footsteps of George Marshall, a general turned Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State, and paving the way for generals like former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and current Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. But Powell's kindness and his dedication to country, family, and friends are what Schwarr wants the world to remember. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. A Brazilian senator has formally presented a report recommending President Jair Bolsonaro be indicted on criminal charges for allegedly bungling Brazil's response to the COVID-19 pandemic and pushing the country's death toll to a second highest in the world. AP's Zeria Shekli reports.
The nearly 1,200-page report is based on 6 months of work by the committee investigating the government's management of the pandemic. It calls for Bolsonaro to be indicted on a series of charges, from charlatanism and inciting crime all the way up to crimes against humanity. The report can still be modified before the committee vote on the 26th of October, and the decision on whether to file most of the charges would be up to Brazil's prosecutor general, who was appointed by the president. Analysts say it's unclear if he would act. I'm Zeria Shakli.
Australia's National Science Agency has developed a surveillance system to analyze wastewater samples to detect COVID-19 on long-haul flights. And from Sydney, Phil Masser reports.
Researchers in Australia say wastewater testing is another line of defence against COVID-19. The country closed its borders to most foreign nationals in March 2020 and restricted entry and departure to Australian citizens to curb the spread of the virus. However, restrictions will begin to ease in November. As global travel returns, the government science agency, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, or the CSIRO, believes sewage testing on incoming flights can be an effective way to screen passengers for COVID-19. CSIRO's Land and Water Science Director Dr. Paul Birch says the test is not time-consuming.
We can turn samples around in as little as 4 hours. But one of the things that we are working on are much more rapid methods so that we could turn around samples even faster than that, so that the analyses could actually be done while passengers are going through customs and picking up their luggage, etc.
The study analysed wastewater samples from lavatories of 37 Australian government repatriation flights from countries authorities categorised as COVID hotspots, including India, France, Britain, South Africa, Canada and Germany, landing at Darwin International Airport between December 2020 and March this year. The research found that 65% of flights showed a positive signal for the virus that causes COVID-19, despite all passengers, except children under five, testing negative to the virus 48 hours before boarding. Dr. Birch believes the system could be valuable.
The WHO continues to suggest to us that we need to be prepared for variants that perhaps are going to be even more challenging than Delta variant. But we can actually detect variants in the wastewater as well, so that would also provide us a signal of when a specific variant, if it does emerge somewhere in the world, actually is entering Australia.
The Delta variant was first identified in India and is one of several variants of concern, health experts say. The WHO uses terms such as variants of concern or variants of interest to warn against strains that might easily spread. Australia's health experts hope to be able to detect the virus, with the study published in the scientific journal Environmental International. The study is a collaboration between the CSIRO, Australia's national airline Qantas, and the University of Queensland. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And in other news, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Wednesday authorized booster doses of the COVID-19 vaccines from Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, and say that Americans can choose a different shot than their original inoculation as a booster. The decision paves the way for millions more people in America to get the additional protection with the highly contagious Delta variant of the virus causing breakthrough infections among some who are fully vaccinated. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. And while there, check out our other programs, including shows like Upfront Show, Africa 54 TV show, Straight Talk Africa, and others. And remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are at VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Cornell University researchers recently analyzed more than 88,000 peer-reviewed climate studies between 2012 and 2020 and found that most agree that humans are to blame for global climate change. Rick Pantaleo joins us with this Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, have analyzed over 88,000 peer-reviewed climate studies that were published between 2012 and 2020. The assessment recently published in the journal Environmental Research Letters suggests that 99.9% of those studies agree that climate change is mostly caused by humans. The analysis is a follow-up to one conducted in 2013 that examined climate studies from 1991 to 2012. That report indicated that 97% of the studies suggested that human behavior is changing the world's climate. A recent Pew Research Center survey of people in countries with advanced economies suggests there is extensive concern about the personal impacts of climate change and that most would change their lifestyle to help fight its effects. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
International Edition continues. The UN Refugee Agency reports weeks of unrelenting rain and heavy flooding in South Sudan have washed away whole communities and wiped out the livelihoods of hundreds of thousands of people. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Floods are not new to South Sudan. What is new is the frequency and intensity of the flooding. UNHCR representative in South Sudan, Arafat Jamal, describes the current flooding, which has affected more than 700,000 people, as being of near biblical proportions.
People have lived with flooding for millennia, but they've been able to cope. They've been able to move to higher ground when the floods are there and then come down when they recede. But when you have a high level of flooding year after year that destroys the crops and doesn't allow you to replant, that's when you've got an erosion in people's ability to survive.
Jamal says the present floods have hit at a time when people in South Sudan are facing the triple threat of conflict, COVID-19, and hunger. He says the devastating flooding is expected to continue as the climate crisis intensifies. He notes Jonglei, Unity, Northern Bahr El Ghazal, and Upper Nile are the worst affected states. He says that in his travels through these hard-hit areas, he has witnessed the suffering of the people, many of whom are desperately moving around in search of safety.
I've seen people stranded on islands. I've heard from people who have had to survive by eating grass and roots. And we have also heard of people who have had to walk for 10 days to access dry land. It is also hugely destructive in terms of assets. This is an agricultural country and a country that depends upon its herds of cattle.
Jamal says cattle are stranded and drowning, mired in the mud and unable to survive. He says whole fields of sorghum, mangoes, and millet are destroyed by flooding. He says the UNHCR, together with South Sudan's government, are delivering urgently needed aid to the most vulnerable. That aid includes hygiene items, food, emergency shelter, and solar lanterns to provide light. However, he adds much more assistance is needed and is appealing to the international community to help rebuild the affected communities and restore people's lives and livelihoods. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And for our final story this morning, jailed Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny was awarded the European Parliament's annual Human Rights Prize on Wednesday for his efforts to challenge President Vladimir Putin's grip on power. Navalny, who was poisoned in August 2020 by what Western nations said was a nerve agent, is serving a 2.5-year sentence for parole violations he calls trumped up. The EU has imposed sanctions on Russian officials over Navalny's poisoning and imprisonment. Moscow denies any wrongdoing and accuses the EU of interfering in its domestic affairs. It has also denied Western accusations that Navalny was jailed for his political activities and said he was being punished for breaking the law. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. And visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great day ahead.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to